Welcome to day 124 of our 180-day study of the Westminster Standards. We're in the sixth commandment, which is, thou shalt not kill, and the Westminster catechisms divide each of the Ten Commandments into two basic categories, what is required by the commandment and what is forbidden in the commandment. The shorter catechism, question 69, says the sixth commandment forbids the taking away of our own life or of the life of our neighbor unjustly, or whatsoever tendeth thereunto. And we're looking more specifically at larger catechism question 136, which says that the sins forbidden in the sixth commandment are all taking away the life of ourselves or of others, except in case of public justice, lawful war, and necessary defense. We looked at public justice, by which we mean capital punishment, and yesterday we looked at or began looking at lawful war. And today, in the next 9.5 minutes, hopefully, we're going to complete our examination of lawful war as an exception to the command, thou shalt not kill. And we're going to be, I think our goal really is to overturn what the Westminster Assembly said in the 1640s, and actually to overturn what pretty much all of the leading theologians of Christendom have been saying, at least since the Emperor Constantine. So that's a pretty crazy ambition to do that in 10 minutes, and it's not going to happen unless you are a Berean and you study the scriptures to see if these things are true. And if it takes a while, a long time to study scripture, that's great. And if you want to comment or ask questions or voice some objections on the blog, in the comments below, that's also great. The reason I'm taking some extra time to look at these two items, well, actually these three items, but specifically this two, public justice and lawful war, is that last year in America, over 10,000 murders were committed by private parties. But during the 20th century, public justice and lawful war accounted for over 10,000 killings every day committed by government because of these exceptions to the Sixth Commandment. And Christians in America, Christians in Germany under Hitler, Christians in the Soviet Union, Christians in most of these lands have accepted or approved of these killings. But if we're concerned about the violation of the Sixth Commandment, if we're concerned about the taking away of human life, then our focus, the focus of our concern, should primarily be on the government or the state as the greatest killer, really, on the planet. And that's why I'm taking time to look at these exceptions that the Westminster Confession and or Catechism offers to the Sixth Commandment. To review, we looked at capital punishment the day before yesterday and found out that the purpose, or at least I suggested that the purpose in the Bible for what we call capital punishment is the shedding of blood to make atonement or to cleanse a defiled land. We saw in Deuteronomy 21 that when there is an unsolved homicide, in other words, we have a murder has been committed, but we don't know who the murderer is, that the Bible commanded the city council to shed the blood of a heifer, and then that would cleanse the land or make atonement for the land. And Numbers 35 says that blood, the shedding of innocent blood, defiles the land, and the land cannot be cleansed or atonement cannot be made. And the Hebrew word there is atonement, except by the blood of him that shed the innocent blood. And so we suggested that the purpose of capital punishment was atonement. And then yesterday, as we looked at the first of two proof texts, which are offered by the larger catechism for lawful war as an exception to the sixth commandment, we found out that the purpose of war is the shedding of blood on a national scale, capital punishment on a national scale, where an entire nation is devoted a religious ban, a dedication to an entire nation dedicated to become a whole burnt offering, to be sacrificed, for its blood to be shed in order to cleanse the land, in particular the promised land, where Israel was told they weren't going to inherit this land and God was going to vomit the inhabitants of the land out so that the Israelites could take possession of it. And we looked at the one proof text the second of the two proof texts offered by the Catechism. Deuteronomy 20 said that the priest, and that war is a priestly function. Today we're looking at the second of the two proof texts which are offered by the Westminster Assembly that proves that lawful war is an exception to the sixth commandment, thou shalt not kill. And that text is Jeremiah 48:10. Cursed be he that doth the work of the Lord deceitfully, and cursed be he that keepeth back his sword from blood. The emphasis, of course, here, cursed be he that keepeth back his sword, that using the sword is a good thing, and it's a lawful exception to the sixth commandment. If you look at Jeremiah 48 and this verse, verse 10, in context, I think you'll see that this is not really saying what it, I mean, it's not to be taken literally, that it's not the case that a person is cursed if he keeps back his sword from blood, that if he doesn't fight, he's cursed, that fighting is good, that war is good. I think the norm in the Bible is seen in Micah 4 and Isaiah 2, that the norm is to beat our swords into plowshares and not to train for war, that war is something we are to avoid, and it's not something that is good, and that actually war is cursed, as the saying, recent modern saying is, war is hell. So, and there's a link there as you're looking, if you're following along, you see the verses from Micah 4, Micah 2, and then there's a link, swords into plowshares, which I think tries to defend the idea that beating swords into plowshares is the norm for our day. This verse in Jeremiah 48 is a kind of what I would call divine taunting. It's not meant to be taken literally. It's like the antithetical verse in Joel 3:10, beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. Why should the weak say, I am strong? Why should they beat swords into plowshares? It's not really a command. It's an indication that God's judgment is certain. It's an indication that God's judgment has been decreed. And it's, as I say, a kind of taunting of the victims, a taunting of even those who commit it, to say that their actions are being used by God, and what would ordinarily be wrong is here being used by God to accomplish his purposes. We have a comment here from a well-known, respected Bible commentary, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, which explains that this is not really a normative interpretation. I think the Catechism made a mistake, really, to use Jeremiah 48 as a verse that proves that war is good. Maybe other verses could be used, but to use this to say that war in general is good, or that is has an exception, I think is a mistake. In general, there are dozens and dozens of verses in the Old Testament, and these are often used to justify war, but what they show is that God is sovereign, and that just as Israel was used to exact or to administer, execute capital punishment on a national scale against those nations in the Promised Land, so God is sovereign over entire nations and their entire armies. I'll give you two examples from Isaiah 13 and Isaiah chapter 10. In Isaiah 13, we have a prophecy against Babylon, and God says he's going to raise up the army of the Medes to judge Babylon for her sins. And Isaiah is talking to Babylon about the coming judgment. And Isaiah says, that the soldiers of the army of the Medes, you've heard of the Medes and the Persians, that these soldiers are his sanctified ones, that the Lord commands them, that he calls his mighty ones, he musters the armies together. These armies are coming from the Lord. They are the weapons of his indignation. This is the day of the Lord's wrath and fierce anger. The coming destruction is a terror for evildoers, and God is sending a sword to cut them down. Now, notice two things. First, the Medes are not saints. That is to say, they're not sanctified ones, not literally. God is just using them. God orchestrates them. God turns the heart of the king like a river, and not just the heart of the king, but the heart of the entire army. And he uses an entire army to come in and invade Babylon and destroy Babylon because of Babylon's sins. The language is the language of Romans 13, a sword chopping down evildoers. It's the Lord's wrath and so forth. And they're the ministers of God because they're serving God's purposes. Isaiah 10 is another example. It's a prophecy against Israel. God is going to send the Assyrian army, known throughout the ancient world as the most brutal of armies. And he's going to use the Assyrian army to judge Israel because of Israel's sin. And you know, Isaiah talks about Israel's sins. And now in chapter 10, he says that the Assyrian army is going to invade Israel, and that the army is the rod of the Lord's anger. Their weapons are the Lord's indignation. It's the Lord who is sending these totally barbaric killers. And their purpose is to judge this hypocritical nation. God gives them a command in Isaiah 10:6, and the command he gives them is to do what the Assyrian army does so well, which is to steal property, to kill husbands, rape their wives, and enslave the children, and basically to treat them like sewage in the street. This is a command, to use the word that Isaiah uses, but it's clearly not a command in the ethical sense, because in the next few verses, God says that he's going to judge Assyria for doing exactly what Isaiah says God commanded Assyria to do. Obviously, what Assyria was doing was ungodly. It was a violation of the sixth commandment, thou shalt not kill, violation of the eighth commandment, thou shalt not steal, violation of all kinds of commandments for one nation to go invade another nation, kill, rape, and pillage. It's all wrong. But nevertheless, God is sovereign over these evildoers, and then God judges the evildoers, even though he, in his sovereignty, sent the evildoers to judge Israel. None of this legitimizes war. It would be wrong for you to enlist in the Assyrian army to carry out God's judgment against Israel. You will be judged if you enlist in the Assyrian army, even though the Assyrian army is doing God's is a servant of God, serving God's will and obeying God's eternal decree. What they're doing is lawless and wrong. And these are not verses. Even though the Bible here, Isaiah, says that the soldiers are saints, sanctified, and are doing God's purpose, they are still wrong. And it's not an exception to the sixth commandment. Again, I think I've mentioned before that we had a lot of people die in World War II, and a lot of people consider World War II to have been a good war, even though the consequences of World War II were the expansion of communism over a billion people. I think that if you look at the Bible as a whole, you'll see that there's been kind of a superficial understanding of some of these texts, and even, I think, in the case here of the Westminster Larger Catechism, a superficial understanding of of Jeremiah 48 and similar verses, which have been used by theologians, and I'm sure that the theologians in the Westminster Assembly, in their treatment of war, used other verses in the same way, but I think it was a mistake. The tendency of the belief that war is lawful in any case, really, in any case, has been a tendency to justify the killing of, well, in the 20th century, millions, hundreds of millions of people have been killed as a result of the belief propounded by Christian theologians that public justice or capital punishment, and capital punishment on a national scale, or war, or lawful war, or however you think of that, that these two are legitimate exceptions to the sixth commandment. And that's our 10 minutes. In fact, we've gone over time. There's a few links here at the end to look at if you want some more verses. War, capital punishment, and the sword looks at verses that talk about capital punishment on a national scale, that talk about war as the shedding of blood and the cleansing of the land. Blessed are the peacemakers, some verses about how important peace is, and help us interpret these verses that seem to suggest that war is okay. There's the just war theory, and even by that theory, no war in the last 200 years that the United States has engaged in has been a just war. That's my opinion. If you're welcome to argue on the blog comments, there's another link there. Would Jesus celebrate Memorial Day, which looks at some of the wars the United States has engaged in for the last 200 years and asks really simple questions about whether these wars were really legitimate. And finally, you look at all those, not all of them, well, maybe all of the verses that say God is sending a sword, that God is sending evil, and that the sword is an evil, that God is sovereign over all those soldiers who bear the sword. They bear not the sword in vain, to use the language of Romans 13. So this is a paradigm-shifting proposition. I understand that. And like I say, your arguments or comments or questions are welcome on the blog. We can get into some discussion. Obviously, to do this like the Bereans, there needs to be discussion. There needs to be thoughtful analysis of the Bible on a huge subject involving potentially violations of God's commandment on a planetary scale involving hundreds of millions of human beings. A big subject, way past our 10-minute limit here today. We'll be back tomorrow on day 125 to look at that third exception that's listed by the larger catechism, necessary defense or self-defense.